And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And we probably were recording for a solid 15 minutes before this even started. So, let's get on to this.
We are raring to go today.
Yes, we are. Brewers last night destroyed the Houston Astros. Very good effort of Giovanni Gallardo. Went 7 innings, allowed 1 run on 3 hits, struck out 5. The only run he allowed was a home run to Chris Snyder. And really, Gallardo looked good. He looked like he got his confidence back a little bit. And honestly, I think this just was a pent-up frustration win for the Brewers, losing at one point, like, the last 9 out of 10. And, I mean, they don't know if they're back in contention for it at all, but, I mean, they don't want to go on this huge losing streak and let it continue anymore.
Oh, absolutely. It was nice. It put Gallardo up over 500 for the year. He's 9-8 now. Three hits for Gallardo and then 2 from Henderson. That's all the hits that were surrendered for the whole game. Frankie did a very good job striking out 2. Didn't give up a hit or a walk. So that's going to be great for his numbers and great for his confidence too. And I think a lot of it comes down to, like you said, I think it was just, it was time for them to turn it on. I mean, everyone in the lineup, except for Ricky Weeks, unfortunately, and Cesar Asturias, managed to get a hit.
Surprise there with Cesar.
Right. Cesar Asturias pinch hitting is weird, but, but no, I mean, it was fantastic run by everyone, I thought. And I think it comes down to, you know, when you look at what happened this week, from the time we did our last podcast to the time we're doing it today, you have, you know, Zach Greinke getting traded, obviously. You have George Kataris getting traded. You have the bullpen coach getting fired. You have a new bullpen coach starting up. And then in this game, the manager and the bench coach both get tossed from this game. I think the higher ups in the Brewers, the coaching staff and those above them, are really letting this team know that, you know, we're not giving up on anything, and we're gonna keep going at this with all the same fire we would if we were in a division race right now. So you don't have any excuse to give up, and I think that's kind of just what happened here. And maybe that switch is on for the Brewers now. There's no bones about it. It's really not going to do a lot of help. It's very much too little, too late. But it's good to see that fire isn't gone from this team, because a lot of this team is probably going to be back next year.
You know, I want to note on something Zach Greinke said when he was traded. Was he said that, you know, despite how bad, and then this is just me kind of paraphrasing, I don't know what it was, quote, word on word, but he said, despite how, you know, the Brewers have been playing and how awful the things have been, he goes, everybody in the clubhouse is still remaining highly positive, and, you know, they all get along with each other. He goes, you see in losing clubhouses sometimes, everybody argues with each other, nobody gets along. He goes, that's not the case with the Brewers. And I think, you know, Ron Menicke does play a big role into that. He, you know, gives his guys confidence. I mean, yeah, Axford was struggling, but, you know, he still put the ball in his hands, still gave him time, even when he was, you know, pitching the 7th and 8th, would have him pitch for an inning or two. I mean, Ron Menicke has confidence in his guys, and I think that's something genuine that a lot of managers, I don't want to say don't have, but I think it's just something that Menicke just, it's just a talent for him. He knows how his guys perform. He knows how his guys do under pressure, and he knows how to handle his guys if they lose. You know, I mean, as a manager, you're still personally responsible for why your team loses and wins. I mean, yeah, part of it is your guys playing, but part of it is you managing those guys through slumps, through hot streaks, and through wins and losses.
Right, absolutely. And I don't think, I mean, obviously a manager is not going to get a lot of credit for putting a team on an even keel. But he does that really well, especially in a losing year. There are so many things that can go wrong, and the bullpen imploded sometime before the 4th of July and hasn't really been able to gain any traction, although I would argue that they're starting to now. I mean, he's got a very difficult job, and it really pains me to see all the people in this fan base that are calling for Ron Renneke to be fired now. It's difficult to see because it was 96 wins the year before. Even 90 wins at this point is going to be impossible. But, you know, it's very much a similar team to the one that was last year. And how can we fire this guy, I guess?
You know, I want to bring up a quick thing about managers and actually football-wise. And this may be a very kind of off-the-mark analogy, but look at, like, Andy Reid of the Philadelphia Eagles. The man's been there forever. They've been to Super Bowls and lost them, but he's still the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, I guess you could say the same thing for Milwaukee. I mean, Renneke, this is, what, his second year there? I mean, you can't just jump off Renneke's ship already and say, oh, he's terrible, he's awful, he's leading the Brewers in the wrong direction. Because ultimately, he doesn't go out into the field, he doesn't, you know, go into the bullpen and pitch. He's not those guys. He can tell, you know, the bullpen coach or the, you know, guys like that, okay, I want him in for this certain matchup. And yeah, those are, you know, in his jurisdiction. He can do that. But ultimately, Ron Renneke isn't out there throwing, you know, the strikes and the balls and things like that. He's not out there doing that. And a lot of people just are so quick to jump on Renneke's case about it and say, well, he's awful. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's a terrible manager. And I will say there are things I do question about Renneke, about why he takes some guys out when he does. Like, I think, if a guy's at, like, 89 pitches, he kind of freaks out. I know he's done that with fires a few times. But, I mean, other than that, I don't have anything against Ron Renneke. He's doing a fine job. And it's just, it's a bad season. It's bad luck. It happens, you know. Things are out of your control, and it just goes that way.
Yeah, I think I think there are lots of things that Renneke can do, like, you know, leaving a pitcher in a little bit longer, maybe, you know, but a lot of those things are just as up in the air, and from our comfy seats in our living room or, you know, in Miller Park or whatever, obviously we're all capable of running a major league ball club, so
oh, yeah.
It makes us, it pains us to see him, you know, when he would pull Greinke or Gallardo in the seventh when you know he could go the eighth, but, you also don't have the same depth of information that Renneke has about these teams. And I guess my opinion on this is we were in the National League Championship Series last year with Ron Renneke. We know he has the ability to lead this team there. There were no complaints about Ron Renneke last year. There's nothing but complaints about him this year. Now imagine Alex Gonzalez stays healthy and continues hitting in the high 200s, maybe even he hits .300. Imagine Matt Gammel stays and he keeps hitting in the 280s like he was. Imagine Jonathan Lucroy never gets injured and he keeps up his pace where he was hitting .345. Now, do the issues with the bullpen, do the issues with pulling pitchers, do the issues with losing games seem as pertinent? I say they don't. And I say that we would still not have any complaints, even if we were still in fourth place, but with a lesser margin.
Well, I think even in retrospect to that, of how well the offense does, I don't think it would change the bullpen at all. I think they'd still have games and they come in and implode. I mean, you look at Monday's game, we're up 8-4 in the ninth, and, I mean, the Brewers literally won that game 8-7 by this, you know, by a hair. And I just, the offense has.
But they still won.
They still won. But the offense has been doing well ever since the end of May. And you would never know it because the Brewers keep losing games because the bullpen keeps blowing these games for them. So, I mean, would that extra padding help? Probably. And, you know, it may. The bullpen, I think, would still be doing not great. But I think with the extra padding from Gamble, Gonzalez, and Lucroy, I think would add it to where if the bullpen gave up 3 runs, we'd still have like a 2-run lead. So maybe, I mean, that's a lot of asking what-if questions. But, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say injuries kill a season, but you also, Sean Markham is a huge injury as well.
Injuries kill is confidence. What injuries kill is momentum.
Momentum
and
is a big
those
one
are two
there.
Things... Those are the two things that the Brewers really haven't had a whole lot of. And I mean, there are a lot of these games that they've blown. Yeah, there were some high-scoring ones, definitely. But we've also blown a lot of, you know, 1-0 games. We've also lost a lot of 4-3 games. And those are games, too, where you definitely want to be able to rely on the bullpen. You want to be able to have the bullpen come in with it 3-3, and you want them to leave with it 3-3, or you winning, 5-3 or 4-3. You have a lot of games where you're up 2-1, and you want it to stay 2-1. I get that. But at the same time, I mean, you can't get above 500 scoring 2, 3, 4 runs a game. It's just not possible, So when they do come big, and they're scoring 7, 8, 9, 10 runs, it's definitely nice to see, and that ball's carrying really well. And that's when, to some degree, it's even harder on a pitcher, because if the ball's carrying that well and people are seeing the ball that well when it's 9-7 or whatever, it's not even going to take a big mistake for that ball to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's been on and off, really. Not even really a case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with the Brewers. It's just been bad and good. And, I mean, it's been really bad and really good. So it's been like, how should I describe this season, at least early on? Bipolar? So, okay, yeah, maybe it is a case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Especially with guys like Giovanni Gallardo, who would, like, dazzle you, and then in the next game would look awful. And then, like, Randy Wolf this year has just looked flat-out awful. I think if Randy Wolf were to pitch the way he had been last year, we would be fine, because even with the loss of Greinke, we've had Mike Fiers step into that, I guess, new ace role, even though I think it's a little early to jump the gun and call him an ace right now. But, I mean, he's brought everything to the table, and he's delivered more than his fair share. I think going forward, though, you have to at least consider how next year's going to be. Do you resign Sean Markham? I think you kind of have to at this point to at least keep that experience in the rotation. I think you say your goodbyes to Randy Wolf, and I think you have to experiment a little with Chris Narvison. I'm not comfortable enough with having Fiers, Thornburg, and Estrada all in the rotation. I think you at least need Fiers in the rotation, and then you have him in a mix with, Markham, Gallardo, Narvison, and then maybe Thornburg, because I don't like Estrada starting. So, but then again, there's also, those guys we got in an Angels trade that we could also bring up.
Yeah, I don't like Estrada as a starter as much as I like Thornburg as a natural starter. We saw him come in and do well in relief, but he's not built to be a reliever, and I heard a lot of my friends say a lot of things that were very, very they were very disappointed in Thornburg having to leave with his arm fatigue. Which again is that kind of, strictly fan viewpoint where it's like, well, he's a pitcher, why can't he just pitch a couple innings every day? It's, not even as hard as starting. No, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is. You have to go through all that warm-up. You have to run through batters the same way. You have to attack batters a little bit differently as a reliever than you can as a starter, because you don't have that long space of time where your energy is not built the same way for relief. And Thornburg's not built to be a reliever. He was never a reliever. He was always a starter. And so his body's built, to be a sprinter one day out of a week. Basically, so I like him starting a lot better than I like Estrada starting. I think Estrada could be comfortable as a long reliever. I think I see in the Angels trade, I think I see John Helweg becoming a starter, though he's probably going to be a better 3 or 4 than anything else. And Ariel Pena, I like him better as an impact reliever. I like him better as a guy who's going to come in, 6th inning, 5th or 6th inning and or in a tight spot and be able to just power that ball, because that's what he does better than a lot of other people in the in the farm system in the majors. So,
do you see Pena coming in though, like to be a starter if we need be, like with injury? I mean, we had, say, this year with Estrada. Do you think Pena could do well in that role?
Yeah, I think he could. If he needed to be a spot starter, I bet he would. But, I mean, he's a guy that would probably, you know, give you five or six. And the last couple innings would probably be a little bit more rough. But you also have to remember, too, that we have Taylor Youngman. We have Jed Bradley. We have Willy Peralta. We have a ton of pitchers, you know, in our list that, you know, some even that are further down that you would put like 21 to 30, you know, is filled with pitchers that can be serviceable in the major leagues. I don't see Helweg or Pena coming in until late 2013. And even then, I think you probably want to put, Youngman and Bradley and Peralta above them, just because we have a bigger knowledge base about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of thinking about just as being a Brewer, you know.
And I also have to ask about this trade. When do you think we'll see John Segura?
I think he gets a shot in spring training, and I think he earns it.
Yeah, I don't see the Brewers keeping Ransom or Turris after this season.
No, there's no reason.
No. I don't think we need to keep Alex Gonzalez anymore. I mean, the fact that we traded Greinke for a shortstop and the fact that we have people that can play shortstop, you know, if need be. I mean, I think if you have to keep anybody out of the three, maybe Cody Ransom, because he can actually hit a little bit.
Right.
So maybe you want to keep him just for experience, and then bring up maybe Taylor Green or Jeff Bianchi again.
Well, if I have to keep one of the three, I keep Alex Gonzalez. But if I can't keep Alex Gonzalez and I have to keep one of the other two, then I keep Cody Ransom.
Yeah, so it's kind of a slippery slope either way you go. But I think Segura will definitely come into his own next year. And I mean, I hope he does.
I think seeing him in 2013 is almost a guarantee. I mean, he was in the Futures game this year. He performed very, very well. He, I think you look at him plus Scooter when Ricky's contract gets out. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Ricky's days are about as long as his contract is in this town. He was... Last year, they said that Ricky Weeks was one of the, you know, biggest bang for your bucks, basically, like, in terms of what his contract was for how he performed the year before. You know, in 2012, he was, like, the guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now he got that money. He's healthy. He's been healthy all year, and he just is doing terrible. And that just happens sometimes, you know. You get a short peak, you have a really short fuse, and maybe it's gone for him now. But I don't. I think it's time when his contract is up, or if we can find a good place to move it, that Ricky is not long for this team.
You know, looking at Ricky Weeks, it's very interesting because I'm looking at his stats from previous years, and I don't even understand why the Brewers gave him the contract they did. He only had 1 year where he had over 50 RBIs, and that was 2010.
It was potential.
Yeah, but potential at batting 269. And I just... Yeah, he had 29 home runs, but I mean... I just... You don't give a guy that much money for 1 year, because he had been playing with the Brewers since 2003, on and off since then, and really are into full-time around 2005. So you see a good chunk of Ricky Weeks from 2005 to 2010, and you give him that much money based on 1 year.
Basically, I don't
get that at all. I think that really screwed the Brewers over, because he's just not performing, and he's not performing this year. He's gotten into somewhat of a mini-hot streak, but, I mean, that's not enough to justify his entire season slump.
Got him all the way up to 209.
Oh, boy.
Ricky is Ricky's a strange case, because he's offensively speaking, he is a hybrid player. You know, or at least, you know, kind of the book on him is, you know, he could make contact, you know, at the rate that a leadoff hitter should. He can run the way that you would like a number two batter to hit, to run. And he has power for a 3-4 and a 5. But he's not really any one of those.
Well, he kind of is, but to a lesser degree, because neither one of those, none of those stats stand out any more than the other one does. I mean, he can hit for power, but does he? No. He can hit for cleanup, but does he? No. He can steal bases, but does he? Sometimes. But, I mean, he doesn't really stand out that much in any given direction. I mean, there's nothing really about Ricky Weeks that you go, wow, that's awesome. I mean,
every fourth play at second base.
Yeah, about that might be about it. But I mean, it's just.
And I mean, I certainly don't want to. I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of trade lust coming off a quiet deadline where I was assuming we were going to try to move Corey Hart. We were going to try to move Randy Wolf. You know, we were going to try to do a lot of things, and none of those materialized. And now we're kind of sitting back and going, wait a second, why are some of these people on our team? And, you know, when Ricky Weeks is good, Ricky Weeks is good. And he's a guy that you absolutely want on your team. But when he can't perform, you really, really wonder what he's doing here. And unfortunately, more times than not, he has to remind you why he's here with some, you know, extravagant glove work or a home run, and they're just not coming quick enough for the type of money he's had and the type of career that everyone believes he's having or is going to have.
Yeah, it's really just astounding the type of money you put forward for a guy who, I'm going to make another Yankees reference, who isn't even hitting close to what Robinson Cano is. I mean, the money you pay him, he should be hitting that. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind he should be hitting that. He should be one of the top second basemen in the NL, and he's far from it. He's a guy, like you said,
certainly getting paid like it.
Yeah. I mean, he plays, you know, like an average average second baseman. And we don't need an average second baseman, especially with all the hype that did surround him. And that people are under this illusion that he's some type of player that he isn't. So,
right.
I don't get that. You brought up about trading Corey Hart, and I don't understand that quite as much. Because, I mean, unless they really want to go with Ishikawa for the rest of the year, I think Corey Hart has to play first. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. I think maybe why people might have brought that up is the fact that when Gamble will be back next year, there's going to be no spot for Corey Hart now that Norrie's really taken over and right.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he's starting to warm up a little bit more, and I like Corey Hart's bat in the lineup.
I like Corey Hart's bat in the lineup, and I actually really, really like his defense at first base. The trade with Corey Hart is nothing about how I feel about Corey Hart. As an outfielder, everyone is very aware of how I feel about Corey Hart. And I don't apologize for it. I don't make any, you know, don't make any qualifications for it. He was not a very good right fielder. We just needed him to be there for that amount of time, essentially. And he was the best of the options we had at right. In first base, I really, really like him, but let's be honest, when a player can reinvent himself the way that Corey did, although I won't say he really reinvented himself because he came through the minors as a first baseman, it is, you know, your value's never going to be higher. And if we really are looking for rebuilding, let's look to rebuild and let's use someone like Corey Hart to help us get there. I do believe in the winter meetings you're going to see Corey leave. I firmly believe that. Which is going to make a lot of Brewers fans upset, I think, because Corey Hart's been one of those guys, one of those, like, hometown guys that we like so much as Brewers fans. But I think it's time for him to move on. He's going to be entering free agency, you know, in a little bit. He doesn't have a whole lot left on his contract. We could get some real value out of him at the end of this season, and I think, why not do it now when we have Gamble who can prove that he belongs here. I think he did a great job in the short amount of time he was healthy. I don't see any reason, I guess the reasons to keep Corey Hart aren't as compelling as the reasons to deal him.
So basically, it's just there's no room for him. I mean, because you can't make him a backup player.
Right. He's too expensive to make a backup player. It would be doing him a disservice. It would be like what we did with Kataris, sending him to the A's. We sent him somewhere where we knew that, you know, he can become the player that he's supposed to become, basically. He doesn't have any excuses left now. We gave him a great shot with Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, Kataris got his first hit this week as an Oakland A. Officially batting .333. But, you know, it's a deal that no one can really be upset at if we get good value for Corey.
No, and I think you can from that, because people know the type of player he is and that he's that versatile outfielder and first baseman now. And I think a team looking for a first baseman, Texas, you could get something for him. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there, but, you know, there are teams that do need first baseman. All right, I think moving on, we want to talk about Mike Fiers and Norichika Aoki. And are they legitimate Rookie of the Year contenders? I think more so Mike Fiers than Aoki, but I don't want to put one above the other. Mike Fiers on the year is 4-4 with a 1.77 ERA, 67 strikeouts, and a whip of 1.06. Norichika Aoki is batting .278 with 6 home runs and 24 RBIs and does pretty well in the outfield. So I think if you have to go with a Rookie of the Year, at least inside the Brewers organization, I think it has to be Mike Fiers.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but I think both of them need to be in the discussion. I mean, Nori's numbers aren't amazing. They aren't anything really flashy. 2 months ago, he was leading all rookies basically in everything, or in the top three of everything. And his numbers have fallen off a little bit. And remember that he is 30 now. Or if he's not 30, he's pushing it.
He's 30.
He's had 5 seasons in Nippon professional baseball. Japanese professional baseball. I think he's doing a fantastic job, and he loves playing for the Brewers. I don't think he's going to get a nod for anything, because you have someone extremely overhyped in the NL in Bryce Harper. and you have a slew of other people who are performing just a little bit better than him in one or two of these other numbers. But across the board, the most consistently well-performing rookie in the National League is Norichika Aoki. And in terms of Fiers doesn't have the numbers, you know, innings-wise, that a lot of other people have. But when you can go on a stretch of starts like Fiers has, where you have an ERA under 1, where he gives up, you know, in a game when he gives up 3 runs and everyone feels incredibly disappointed, or when you have a start where he gives up 2 runs and his ERA goes up, those are Rookie of the Year problems.
And, you know, Fiers has not been facing, you know, cakewalk teams. He's faced the White Sox, he's faced Arizona, he's faced St. Louis, he's faced Cincinnati, he's faced Washington. He's faced a lot of good teams. And, I mean, with those starts, he's given up a combined 3 earned runs in all of those starts.
Yeah.
That is
only
amazing.
4 runs in his last 7 starts.
That is amazing. I mean, yeah, he is an older prospect from what the Brewers did have in their minor league system, but, I mean, he's pitching like he's 20. I mean,
he's what, 27, 28?
27.
27.
And he's pitching, and it's impressing everybody. I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be like Zach Hu. I mean, because obviously, Greinke's a huge hole in the rotation now. But I think if Fiers can keep this up for the rest of the season, he is a legitimate, I'd say even 2 next year. He probably won't be the 2 if we re-sign Markham, but he's definitely a legitimate 2 or 3. I mean, there is no doubting the stuff that he has. He is a strikeout pitcher. Struck out 10 in the game against Arizona, struck out 9 in his last outing against the Nationals. Right. And you know, he goes fairly deep into games, 6-7 innings. So, I mean, he takes a lot of stress off the bullpen, and he doesn't, you know, I mean, have too high of a pitch count. I mean, in his game against Miami, he went 7 1/3 innings and only had a pitch count of 107. That's into the eighth inning with a pitch count of 107. That's pretty good.
He's very efficient, and he's very aggressive. And you get the idea that he doesn't care so much about, you know, giving up a hit, giving up a walk. Well, he doesn't care about giving up a walk because he plain doesn't do it that often. You know, and he's not afraid of making mistakes. And I think, you know, going back, I think people in the bullpen can learn something from the way that, like, Mike Byers or Tyler Thornburg are going to pitch. Because they don't care about mistakes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get really worried about making mistakes, that's when you put softer stuff on your pitches. You try to leave it into the strike zone because you don't want to walk a guy. Or you push too hard because you're going to give up a home run, something like that. And you end up basically psyching yourself out. And Fires and Thornburg don't do that. They're not wired that way, at least at this point.
I think one of the most impressive things about Fires especially is the fact that he doesn't really walk people that much. And and his opponents are batting .219 against him.
He has confidence in his stuff.
You know, one thing I want to note, fantasy-wise at least, I remember about the beginning of July, he was owned in about 40% of leagues. Right now, Mike Fiers is owned in 91.5% of leagues. He has jumped up 13.2, which, I mean, he kept increasing throughout the weeks. I think he was, like, maybe 70 or so last week, and he's jumped up tremendously because people are now starting to notice him.
Yeah.
And people, you know, notice him, and he gets those more innings underneath his belt. I don't know if he'll be the Rookie of the Year, but he should at least be in the talk for it, definitely.
He absolutely should, absolutely. Going to be interesting today, by the way. He plays... he's going up against Jordan Lyles in about 10 minutes now, Central Time. And he is... he's never faced anyone from Houston yet. So it's going to be... It's going to be interesting to see how he works, but he seems to be the type of guy who's a real student about his lineups. Either that, or he's just so crazy that he doesn't care, and he can just power past anybody. But it'll be very interesting to see what they do tonight.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with the way he's, you know, composed himself being up here, and it's just, I think he might have been ready even last year. I think he was ready for this.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely proving to us that he was ready for this, you know, this MLB road. He was, you know, preparing himself to get up here, and he's blown away good teams at that. And I think if he holds this poise that he has, he's going to be a pretty deadly pitcher in the next few years.
Oh, absolutely.
I think one thing we wanted to talk about in the last part of this podcast isn't even Brewers related, actually, unless you want to count George Gutaris. But the Oakland A's and how well they just have been doing this entire season. They've turned it around. They are 3.5 out of the West in the AL, and just very impressive stuff out of them. They have young pitchers in Jared Parker and Tommy Malone. It's just they have a lot of things going right for them. Yoenis Cespedes is really turning it around. Josh Reich is doing well in the outfield as well. Infield-wise, they picked up Brandon Age from the Tigers. Jamile Weeks, Ricky Weeks' brother, is doing well. Brandon McCarthy, starting pitchers, due off the DL at any time. And there's just a lot of positives in Oakland.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny with, I'm surprised it's not being talked about more, but, you know, with Moneyball coming out, you know, last year, 2 years ago now, all of a sudden, it's kind of that way with Oakland again. You know, the way they built this team back up. Not a whole lot of big name, high profile guys on Oakland, but people that just get it done. And I mean, they went 19-5 in July. Just an incredible run for them, and it's really, really cool to see, and I'm very glad that that Kataris got to be on that team. He's in a pennant race now, and it's a very good place for him to go, because, I mean, the way that they play, the kind of hard-nosed, you know, just workhorse baseball, it's fun to watch. If you get a chance to see an A's game, you definitely need to watch it.
You know, and they're not in an easy division at all. I mean, you have Texas, who is kind of just scrambling for pitching it now, but still has a very potent offense. You have the Angels, who, with the addition of Zach Greinke, probably have the most lethal pitching staff in the entire MLB, next to the Washington Nationals.
Right.
And then you have Seattle, who actually isn't doing that bad. They're actually doing better than us.
Right.
Who are 49-57 on the year. And I'm not saying Seattle's going to make a stab at it, but I'm just saying you have the AL West that is just overall improving, and Oakland's been a huge part of that improvement. And, you know, it's impressive to see what they've been able to do. You have Ryan Cook, who was an all-star,
mm-hmm.
who hasn't done well lately, blew his last two saves. He's accrued 10 saves on the season, but, you know, he still has an ERA below 2 at that. I think a lot of it is really heavy pitching-wise. They're fourth overall in ERA, fourth in WHIP. Batting-wise, it's really been a struggle for them. They're 24th in runs, 30th in batting average. They're last in batting average, which really surprises me, to be quite honest.
Right.
But, you know, like we saw in 2010 with the Giants, offense doesn't mean everything. And mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how far these A's go.
Yeah, I think you look at that division, the AL West, in the beginning of the year, and you see Texas coming off, you know, another World Series berth, and you look at the Los Angeles Angels, who spent $250 million to rebuild their team, and then you look at Oakland and Seattle, and you say, yeah, this is a two-horse race. And then all of a sudden, you see Oakland a half game back from the Angels, and 3.5 out of Texas for the lead. It's nothing short of surprising.
Yeah, I kind of root for them, but, you know, it's hard because there are so many teams that you want to see do well. I mean, so it's hard to pick just one, but I think Oakland, is an underdog for a lot of teams and maybe becoming slowly the national favorite because just the way they're turning it around. Very last segment I want to get into, something we haven't done in a while, and I just want to shorten it up. Player and offensive guy of the week. I think pitcher of the week for me definitely has to be Mike Fiers. It's just...
Yeah.
Okay, let's just do of the month, and I think it has to be Mike Fiers regardless. He's done just so well, and we talked about him, so that's my pick for at least of the weekend of the month.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. He's done incredible. You know, not getting the wins that he'd like, but you talk about doing really well. Four runs in in his last 8 starts.
That's dating back to June 16th.
Yeah. So in his last 30, in the last 30 days, his average against opponents is .204. It's just astounding, is really what it is.
I think offensively, though, my player of the month and of this week is probably Aramis Ramirez.
Yeah.
Last 7 days, Aramis Ramirez is batting .440, 3 doubles, 2 home runs, 8 RBIs. You know, he has just been turning it around tremendously, and I think they said he batted .357 in the month of June with a .968 OPS. And
yeah.
He really replaced, you know, that Prince Fielder spot that a lot of people thought he was going to have to do when Fielder was gone and we re-signed, and we signed Aramis Ramirez. And, he really helps in that meat of the order.
Absolutely. I think Aramis Ramirez is by far player of the month. You know, only... 11 strikeouts in 99 at-bats. Really, really good. 374 is OPS, is 1.022. It's been very quiet, you know. He had 4 home runs. He's on pace to set a franchise record for doubles this year, really being that guy that we need, you know, with also 21 RBIs over that stretch as well. But I do want to say one thing really quick that I found very, very nice to see. Jonathan Lucroy being back in these last five games. He's hitting .308 with 13 at-bats, not a single strikeout yet, and three walks.
That is impressive.
Yeah, I mean, and for those of us, you know, it's been a quiet wonder for all of us whether or not Lucroy would drop off the way that he dropped off last year. And especially coming back after injury, we expected him not to be so, you know, not to be so hot and need some time to kind of get back into action. And defensively, I think he does need that a little bit. But offensively, I think it's safe to say that, you know, 300-level numbers is something we're going to be seeing from Lucroy from basically here on out.
Yeah, and we can hope he can continue that maybe even into next year as well, because his bat is very, you know, versatile in the lineup. He can bat second, he can bat seventh. I mean, he put him anywhere he can hit.
Yeah, I'd love to see him. I'd love to see him higher up in the lineup too, as his career goes on, and I think it will. But for now, you know, not enough experience to make my player of the month, but he's my I'll call him my player to watch for August.
I can agree there. Well, well, it's been fun. Stay tuned next week, and as always, thank you for listening.
See you later, guys.